almost all his life, and he can say it. I try to say it, and I sound like an idiot.
Welcome to the Exploring Washington State podcast. Here's your host, Scott Cowan.
So my guest today is Steph Forer of the website Eat, Drink, Travel, Y'all. And if that doesn't give you a clue that this is all about Washington, the y'all, which I can't even say. I just can't. I have a friend from who grew up in New Orleans, and he's lived in Washington State almost all his life, and he can say it. I try to say it, and I sound like an idiot. So Steph, I'm going to ask you to give me a little bit of background because we're going to go in three different directions here. First off, you're from Alabama.
Yes,
I'd like
I
to
am.
Hear a little bit about that. Then you went to Seattle. So I'd like to hear some about that. And then we got Walla Walla. So we're going to talk there too. So why don't you introduce yourself? And then how did you go from Alabama to Seattle? What was that journey?
Yeah. So, well, thanks for having me, Scott. I'm so excited to be on the podcast today. So I moved from Alabama to Seattle in 2013. Really the catalyst there was a divorce, was the end of something. And I wanted to start over. I got in my car. I knew I wanted to be in the West Coast. That was just after my 28th birthday. I had never really wanted to be in Alabama for my whole life, but there was always a job, a boy, just bought a home. You know, there was always something keeping me there. And when my marriage ended, got married early, really, really young, and, you know, left at 28, also pretty young, got in my car, drove west, had a friend in Tacoma, had a friend in LA, had a friend in San Francisco, and I just knew I'm going west. I'm going to the West Coast. I didn't even know where I was going when I left, and Tacoma ended up being the first place I landed. Spent a few weeks there, flew down to LA, spent a couple months there with some friends. Actually thought I might move to Los Angeles for a little while, realized I didn't really like Los Angeles. It is beautiful and sunny, but the traffic is horrible. And I flew back up to Seattle where my car was with another friend of mine after I spent some time in LA. And this was in October, late October of 2013. And I just stepped off the plane and I just knew that Seattle was my new home. I didn't know anyone in the city. I didn't have a job. I didn't have a place to live. But I had some savings. I'd recently finished my master's degree in Alabama while I was working previously in nonprofits, mostly in development and some public relations. And I had started to get into social media back in Alabama because my ex-husband was a very talented woodworker, and he was one of the first people to really attack the Etsy platform, if you're familiar with Etsy selling. Mm-hmm. And I ran all his social media. So that's how I kind of got, again, as I said, I have a master's in marketing, but when I was in school, they didn't have social media classes. Now you can go take analytic social media classes, content creation, social media. You can major in social media now at many schools, which is very cool. But I just got, you know, experience in it, kind of running the businesses that he was doing on Etsy. At the time, Instagram was not even a thing. This was probably 2008, 2009. So it was, you know, Facebook and Twitter were king. And so anyways, when I got to Seattle, I was looking for a job, and I had kind of a weird professional background, having worked in nonprofits and was trying to transfer over to like an Amazon or Starbucks. You know, I thought I'd go into something more in tech with, what I had studied in school, and was having, again, a little bit of trouble finding a job right away. And I was sitting at a restaurant, Vaughn's 1000 Spirits in downtown Seattle. The owner was sitting down beside me with his accountant and his manager, and we started chatting, and they needed help with their social media. And I said, oh, sure, I could do this. Look at all the social media I've done for, you know, showed my ex-husband's businesses. They were super impressed. We started working together, thought that would be a part-time thing while I was, you know, until I found a job, but it actually led to just more work. started working with other restaurants, Place Pigalle and Pike Place Market. And then that led to a job with a company called the Where to Eat Guide, which was a popular publication. I think they're all digital now, but worked with them for about 2.5-3 years. They were in multiple cities in the Northwest and got to travel, really introduced me to a lot of different restaurants because they worked with, you know, anywhere from 50 to 80 restaurants in all the markets they were in. So it was just a great way for me to connect with the restaurant community in the Northwest, from Seattle to Portland to Napa to Bend. And so kind of freelancing as a social media specialist became my full-time job. I consider myself a writer by really at my core. That's what I love to do. That's what I'm good at. That's what I can always fall back, is I can sit down and I can write something that I feel like is very readable for people. That's just what I feel very comfortable doing. I was not a photographer. I used to have friends in Seattle that did photography that would come in and help me shoot with clients. Shout out, thank you, Jason Trinkle, for helping me do that for the first year and a half. And then finally in early 2015, I picked up a camera. I just ordered the basic, the starter DSLR for $500. And I just started shooting, and that's where my photography started. And so spent almost 8 years, seven and a half-ish years in Seattle, living downtown, a couple blocks from Pike Place Market, which I loved, worked with some incredibly talented chefs and restaurants. Lots of names that you would know, worked with Pike Place Market, Visit Seattle, worked with Adana and Chef Shota Nakajima, worked with a beloved restaurant, Pincho, and Belltown that's no longer there, worked with some breweries, some wineries, had a wonderful time doing social media consulting, started getting, as I was working on the back end of social media, helping restaurants and businesses. This is kind of when influencers became a big thing. I was very taken with that. And started, kind of sharing my own journey, launched a blog in 2015. That became an additional source of income for me. And then in 2020, as we all know, COVID hit. I was working pretty much only with restaurants at this time. And all of them either closed or slashed their marketing budgets. My boyfriend was working at very, very critically acclaimed Sushi Kashiba at Pike Place Market at the time, had been in restaurants his entire life as well. And, they closed, all the restaurants closed. And so I got a job opportunity in Walla Walla to come work for a small creative firm. And we could not afford the lifestyle we were living in downtown Seattle without very much income. So we moved, and that's kind of what brought me here.
It's all right. So as always, I have questions after,
sorry, that was a super long answer too.
It's okay. So here's my question. So if we were handicapping your story and you said, you were driving west and you had friends in Tacoma, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. Tacoma would not have made the cut, in my opinion. I grew up in Tacoma, and I'm like, there's no way she's going to land and end up in Tacoma. And truthfully, you didn't. You ended up in Tacoma.
So I didn't, but I will tell you, it was really more about the timing of my friends. My best friend in San Francisco wasn't the right time. I had a friend in Los Angeles. Again, it was more about timing, like who could kind of take me. And yeah. to be honest with you, at the time, leaving, never having really spent much time on the West Coast, driving to Tacoma, I really thought that was Seattle. And come on, if you're not from this area, like, let's be real, they're 30 minutes away. The airport's right in the middle. You're pretty close.
Well, they're only 30 minutes away, about 3 a.m. to 3:15 a.m. All nowadays. Right. Traffic has gotten so.
Yeah, anyway,
and I grew up in Tacoma, so I can pick.
Well, I love Tacoma, and I wanted to say, I think that Tacoma gets a bad rap. I remember you know, when I lived in Seattle, people would just, you know, talk down on Tacoma. I'm like, you need to go to Alabama and then go to Tacoma. And then you'll think it's really nice because the museums are amazing. The downtown, the waterfront, there are some great, great restaurants in Tacoma. So just all you Tacoma people out there, I give a shout out. I'm a big Tacoma fan. I can always find a good restaurant. I love the parks there. I love the waterfront. It really is a beautiful place.
I think, and this is just my opinion, so if somebody's going to make a nasty comment in the comments, because I've gotten nasty comments because I talked down about Spokane. I did one time make a comment about how as a kid, and look at me, I'm older than dirt. So long, long time ago, covered wagon to Spokane. Spokane wasn't a great place. And somebody just got really persnickety with me that I said something disparaging about Spokane. I will say that in 2021, Spokane's a great place. I love going to Spokane. Mm-hmm. I left the Tacoma area in 2017, mostly because of traffic. I just got tired of the commute. But Tacoma, I think Tacoma actually plays up its little brother, redheaded stepchild reputation between Seattle, because everything you just said, the parks are awesome. There's great restaurants. There used to be a lot of music clubs there. COVID's changed a lot of things for every city.
Of course.
So as much as I pick on Tacoma, actually, it's got a special place in my heart. So then the other question. So what I was saying is handicapping. I would not have picked Tacoma out of San Francisco. Tacoma. Sorry. Which one doesn't look like the others? Tacoma? Are you a Crimson Tide fan?
Of course. Well, I went to the University of Alabama for my undergraduate degree. My sister went to Alabama. My brother went to Alabama. Hey, come on now. Like, my dad says everybody hates the University of Alabama. Everyone except half of the state of Alabama hates the University of Alabama.
So here's my question about the University of Alabama. And I delicately am going to phrase this. All I know about the University of Alabama is that they're running an NFL franchise disguised as a college program. What else is the school? I don't know anything about, and I don't mean this disparaging, but what else is the University of Alabama good at? Because football's what gets the publicity.
Football is definitely king there. We did have a very, very tough loss to Texas A&M this past weekend. It was heartbreaking. My brother and dad just both texted me about how depressed they were the next day. But the University of Alabama is one of the most beautiful college campuses you will ever see. Gorgeous old oak trees. It is absolutely stunning. They have a fantastic communications program, and they have a fantastic law program. Those are two of the things that they are also very well known, but it is a great school. Definitely the football overshadows everything else, but I definitely got a wonderful education there. My sister got a master's degree in environmental science there. They have some really, really great programs.
Yeah. And I just don't know. I mean, all I know is what I see as a sports fan. You know, they're like an NFL franchise. I mean, They just are. I mean, half their team ends up in the NFL every year. I mean,
it's a force. I mean, I'm telling you, if Nick Saban ran for governor of Alabama, he would win.
not after last week.
God, that was let's not go into it. That was absolutely that was brutal, Scott.
Come on now. I mean, come on. You have to understand that for everybody else but an Alabama fan, that loss was amazing.
I know. And that's what my boyfriend
says. It's all a glimmer of hope.
Texas A&M, that was such a great, you know, those young kids, that was so great for them. I'm like, don't talk to me. I'm like, you don't know. Like, when you don't lose, it really hurts when you lose. Okay.
Right. Like, but you know, yeah. Anyway. All right.
I know. I sound like, that's my dad always said too, that Alabama doesn't have a lot, but we have pretty girls and the best football. The University of, you know, at Alabama.
Okay.
That's my dad for you.
Perfect. So before we start talking about Washington State, I'm going to break my rules. I'm actually going to ask you a couple things about Alabama.
Okay.
As far as food goes. So, and I'll tie it into Washington.
Okay.
What do you miss from home food wise here in Washington?
What do I miss from home? You know, I mean, As far as, you know, obviously Southern cooking, I miss the things that my mom would make. I miss my mom's fried chicken is definitely like probably the number one thing. There are some places doing some decent fried chicken in Washington State, but not a lot. I would definitely say Southern cuisine is lacking here. I miss grits. No one here really does grits. Anytime I see grits on a menu, I'm definitely getting it. I miss Waffle House. Do you know what Waffle House is?
Only from the news where people get beat up or
no, you know,
it's kind of got a bad reputation.
Don't give Waffle House a bad rep. Okay. That shocked me when I moved to the West Coast and I was like, I swear to God, I thought Waffle House was worldwide. Like, where do you go at 2 a.m. if you need cheese eggs and like, and cheese grits and toast and a stack of waffles, like, and it'll cost you $8. Like, Where do you go? Like, IHOP is not the same. Shari's or Sherry's. Not the same. Denny's is not the same. I am telling you, I have had people drag me to that. Like, no, we can get grits here. Like, no, I do not take me to a Denny's and get me these grits and tell me that it is on par with Waffle House, because it is not. At a Waffle House, you sit down, it's all open, you see them cooking your food. And I mean, it is just, you know, you get your breakfast special and it'll be like $4. I'm not exaggerating. So I didn't see Waffle House coming out in this podcast interview, but just because you asked me, I will tell you that was a big shock.
So let me tell you now I can't compare this place to Waffle House. I don't mean it like that, but back in the day for late night food up in Seattle was Best Cafe. Have you ever been to Best Cafe?
You know, I haven't, but I am familiar with it. I've
yeah, aware it was of it. Just it was just this spot you would go, and I will just leave it at that.
Well, and you know that we used to have Ludi's in downtown Seattle, which was actually Filipino owned, and they did like some ubi pancakes and things like that. But they also just that was kind of like the closest I was getting. Were they open? You know, they closed. They had a fire and closed before COVID, actually. It was really actually very sad for the community. It was a really staple downtown. But I would say that was like as close. They were open very late. I don't know if they were open. I can't remember if they were open 24 hours, but till 2 or 3 in the morning. And that I would go there when I first moved to Seattle, when I needed that kind of Waffle House-esque experience. But I miss that place. Right. I think a lot of other people do, too.
All right. So the last question about Alabama. Is how's the coffee in Alabama?
Scott, you know, I can't imagine that it is fantastic, but I will also tell you, I didn't really get into coffee until I moved to Washington State.
Well, that is part of the requirement to be allowed to be a resident here. You have to be fluent in coffee. Okay.
Absolutely. So, but I, just judging on going back, you know, and I lived in, I grew up in Montgomery. Actually, my parents lived about half an hour outside of Montgomery, but that's where we went to school. That's where my mom worked, because I'm from a teeny tiny town without a stoplight. And I will say that since now that I'm going back and have had a lot more experience in the food, coffee, hospitality industry, there are some cool, really cool, impressive coffee shops that have popped up. Not a lot, 2 or 3. At least the Montgomery area, you know, the capital. Now I can't think of the name. It's like escaping me. But like Cafe Luisa is an amazing bakery with good coffee in the Cloverdale area. There's another great coffee shop. Yeah, there's about 3 at least in that area. And I would be willing to bet that there is some pretty decent coffee in Birmingham, which I have several cousins that live there. And I haven't been there in a couple years, but it has really evolved that food scene, and they've gotten a lot of attention nationally just from different chefs and restaurants in the last few years. So I think especially like the Birmingham area has really come a long way.
And here I thought you were going to say Waffle House had good coffee.
You know, they have black coffee. I mean, I would drink it. I don't know if I would drink it now. I haven't been to a Waffle House in a couple of years. It's been a minute. Maybe I need to start the Walla Walla Waffle House. I don't know.
Maybe. Walla Walla Waffle House.
I feel like Walla Walla would be a good place for a Waffle House. I feel like that would fit the demographic here. People would love it.
I think you're probably onto something.
So my job. That's what I'm doing now.
There you go. We're done. You can hang this episode on the wall as an inspiration to your Waffle House journey. Okay. Well, let's just talk Walla Walla, because I'll tell you what I think about Walla Walla. And so 4 years ago, we moved from the Tacoma area over here to Wenatchee. And 3 years ago, I went to Walla Walla for probably absolutely the first time as an adult, maybe as a young kid. So I didn't know what I was getting myself into when I went to Walla Walla. And the best way I can describe it is, like I told you on the phone, I mean, the one thing for me is Walla Walla seems a little isolated for me personally. That's just the one thing. But if I could take Walla Walla's downtown core and shove it into Wenatchee, I think I would have perfection.
Yeah.
And absolutely. So I really love what I've seen about Walla Walla. The people I've met, talked to, not terribly many, but you know, the people I've met and talked to. So what was the motivation to go from Seattle? So you got offered a job in Walla Walla. So that was the motivation. So,
yeah,
but walk me through, you left. Seattle's a big city, vibrant on its good days, rainy the other 364 days of the year. lots of traffic. I mean, to me, lots of traffic, but a lot going on, a lot of cool things going on in Seattle. Absolutely. And so you left. So how much research did you do about Walla Walla before you got in your car and drove east?
Well, and I guess I didn't preface this by saying I had been to Walla Walla at least two or three times before. So I think it was 2016 or 17. I was brought over by a PR firm to stay at the Marcus Whitman Hotel, who had just undergone a renovation, and they toured us around the city. And I think that was a project with the Marcus Whitman Hotel that the PR firm was representing. They brought several writers and influencers over from the Seattle area. I immediately loved it the first time that I visited. I love wine. There's a lot of good food here. Then I got invited back by the Walla Walla Valley Wine Alliance in 2018 to write about a promotion that they were doing. So came back for a second visit. Again, just loved it. And then it was the summer of 2020. Last year, my boyfriend Marcus and I came over for another project. We were working with the Finch, which is a hotel downtown, and Heritage, which is a resort about 12 to 15 minutes from downtown. Both beautiful, beautiful properties, very different. Coming to write about them and work with two different PR firms that we work with a lot. And while I was here, I had a friend that was that has this, like I said, a small creative firm here. We went over to his house for dinner. This was COVID, so it was outside, you know, all around the fireplace and grilling and stuff. And he had a very, again, it's just a few people that worked with him, maybe two or three employees, not a big firm, but one of the girls was leaving, and he was like, well, if you need a job, if you want to work for me, like, let me know. And we were driving back like the next day, and we're like, my boyfriend's like, we're not moving to Walla Walla. And then like within a week, we're like, do we want to move to Walla Walla? because I had always loved it. And I think for my boyfriend at first, he was like the same as you. It's like, it's isolated. And also it's like, we love being by the water. And so we are kind of more in a desert climate almost. There is water around. There's little rivers and streams and stuff. And we've definitely found places that we enjoy. But just, as I said, we lived two blocks from Pike Place Market in the middle of downtown Seattle. If you have not been to Seattle lately, it is not the same city that it was 2 years ago. I thought that I would buy a condo in perhaps the Belltown, Capitol Hill, downtown area in the next, in the next few years. And Seattle would be like, that would be my forever home. That's what I thought. That's what I was on track to do. But with all of just 2020, I saw downtown get destroyed. I saw it burn during the protests, right? Like I'm like three blocks from my apartment. I saw everything graffitied and shut down and boarded up from, Capitol Hill to Belltown to Pioneer Square. I mean, go walk around Pioneer Square. It's still, everything's still boarded up. It doesn't feel safe in that area. The feel of Seattle has changed, and we were paying my apartment, our one bedroom apartment in downtown Seattle was $2,800 a month. And, it may be worth it to pay that to live downtown when you have the Seattle Art Museum across the street, when you have the Symphony a block away. All that stuff's mm-hmm. closed. All the restaurants are closed. You're paying so much to live in this place that you can't, you're not getting any of the benefits. You couldn't use the gym. If I'm paying $2,800 a month, I can't go to the gym. I can't use any of these amenities. You know, I can't, right. you know, I, you know, the market, thankfully Pike Place stayed open and kept me sane. But so many things just closed, and just really seeing the city just get torn apart. It broke my heart because I love Seattle. And again, always thought I would be, ever since I got there, thought I would kind of be there forever. And, you know, who's to say I won't go back? We did buy a home here, so we're here for a while at least. But on that note, we could have never bought a home in Seattle, you know, and we were both making very good money, and but we could have never afforded to buy a home, you know, a house in the Seattle area. So, you know, my mortgage is $1,000 less a month than my apartment was here. And I'm living in a beautiful, you know, home that's 8 years old. So, you know, there was many reasons, just, you know, getting older and sick of throwing money away on rent and sick of paying for, you know, again, it was worth it to me to live downtown where I could walk to coffee, walk to the museums, things like that. But when you're just trapped in your apartment, you know, and you're downtown and it feels almost dangerous, like it just... It was a really sad sure. time, and it's definitely coming back, and I'm so happy to see that things are reopening. And every time I go back, you know, it's a little better. And this, that city has my heart. It's, I always say that the city of Seattle, it saved me from a really bad relationship that I was in. It was just my solace when I moved there. I fell in love with it. And it is a wonderful, beautiful place. And I'm excited to see it just continue to rebuild.
And I do think it's going to course correct. I think ultimately it will course correct, and things will take care of itself. So you're in Walla Walla.
Yes.
And so I have a schoolboy crush on Walla Walla. let's call it that. You know, I mean, very enamored with Walla Walla. First off, we're going to talk about Walla Walla, but there's a really important question I have to know the answer to.
Okay.
And it's what's the best coffee in Walla Walla?
Oh, well, that is a very easy one for me. I can tell you the best coffee is Carte Coffee, Carte Coffee. And it is, okay. It's a mobile coffee kind of food truck. It's a, cutest little cart that, gosh, I don't know Josh's last name, but Josh is the owner. He is this young kid. He has got to be maybe 25. I believe he went to school here. You know, we have three different colleges in Walla Walla. And right. I am telling you, he makes coffee as good as you will find anywhere in Seattle. Everything that he and his team do are amazing. And he just parks his little cart. It's right downtown on Spokane and Main Street, the corner of Spokane and Main Street. He's there right now. He's there Thursday through Monday. His hours just changed for fall. And I'm telling you, I've never had coffee so good. Like, I wake up in the mornings and I'm like, I need Josh coffee today to my boyfriend. I'm like, the drip coffee will not do. And okay. it's just a great, I was telling you a little in our pre-interview, like you walk up, he knows your name. You stand there and you wait for your coffee. Every person that walks up, he knows them. He knows, it's just, he's so community focused. And it's just such a fun, good person. And just really, I don't know how the coffee is that good. I will say we do have another good coffee spot, the Walla Walla Roastery, which is out in the Airport District. And they were my okay. go-to before I found Josh, and they do roast their own beans there. And he actually, uses a lot of their coffee for his drip stuff and different things. Sometimes has them on espresso and things like that. So he's a big fan okay. of theirs. So they're also another good one, but I will say that Carte Coffee is definitely my favorite. But on that note, you know, it is a mobile food truck right. type of thing. So it's not like you can go sit down and you know, work on your laptop for 2 hours and have a coffee. Like, if you want to do that, I would say, you know, go to the roastery or, I hate to say it, the Starbucks downtown too. I will be honest, you know, it's not Seattle. Like, we are limited with, there's not 20 coffee shops in town, but yeah, those two, Carte Coffee or Walla Walla Roastery are both fantastic.
So one comment I made one time, I think probably the first or second time I went to Walla Walla, and as I had told you before, whenever I stay in Walla Walla, I almost always stay at the Finch. I found the Finch. I stumbled across the Finch, and it's just a comfortable place to stay, close to town. I mean, I can walk where I want to go. It's just a great spot to land for the evening. And as I was walking through downtown, the thought hit me was, wine is to Walla Walla what coffee is to Seattle. And in other words, I don't think you could, if you could walk around the city of Walla Walla with a wine glass in your hand, I think that they have strategically figured out how many steps it would take you to complete drinking your glass of wine. And then immediately there is another place for you to get another glass of wine. Just like in Seattle, you can have a cup of coffee and then just when you're finished, there's another coffee shop. So Walla Walla has done that with wine.
Oh, absolutely. I do my own podcast, and I just had the marketing director for the Walla Walla Valley Wine Alliance on, and we were talking all things wine here. And I might not get the number exactly right, but I think that there are over 150 wineries in Walla Walla. And I think that she said that about 130 of them have actual tasting rooms that you can walk into. So, I mean, Walla Walla itself has 30,000. The collective two counties that really make up this area is 60,000 people. I mean, that's not very big. And we have, 120 to 140 wineries that you can walk into and taste wine. There's definitely, I mean, if you walk downtown, I mean, forget about finishing your coffee or wine before you could, you step out and they're right next to each other. I'm not sure. There's got to be at least 20 wineries in that tiny downtown corridor, if not more.
If not more. And I think what I had read one time was like there was 120 wineries. So the fact that it's still growing.
Oh, it's growing so fast. And I mean, it's been exponential. I mean, because I think that the wine boom really started here like in the late 90s, early 2000s. And it's grown so quickly. I wish I had those statistics for you, but if you do the homework, it has been crazy just how much wineries have just blown up in this area. But it's a great grape growing region. It's a rich agricultural hub. There's a great viticulture school here. So a lot of people come here to go to school to learn how to make wine.
Which school is that? Let me interrupt you and say, what school is that? Are you talking WSU?
No, there's a viticulture college in Walla Walla. So it's a college to learn. Yes. And so they teach you all about, and I'm blanking, I don't know if it's just called the Walla Walla Viticulture School. If you just typed in Walla Walla Wine School, it would pop up. My brain is not working right now. But a lot of people come here to go to school. And from what I understand, the curriculum is, I think, 2 to 2.5 years long. And the first half, you learn all about grape growing and the science of it and the farming of the grapes, the weather patterns, and then I think the last half of it is about actually the wine making, what goes into that, like the process, the chemicals, the things you put into it, the science behind it in that way. And then a lot of people, I think, fall in love with it when they come here to learn how to make wine. And I've had many winemakers in the area on my podcast, and I think all of them went to school here to learn how to make wine.
Interesting. Very interesting. And as I told you, before, my palate, I do not have a sophisticated palate for wine. I appreciate it, but I don't appreciate it. Cause I'm not nuanced. I'll either, if you were to pour three glasses of wine, say, tell me which one you like. You might not like, I might go, oh yeah, that Franzi is pretty good. If I didn't know it's Franzi, I'm not the guy you want blind taste testing your high quality wines. But I will say I have a friend down in Texas who, not really a big wine place either, but he's passionate about wine, and he's passionate about Napa Valley. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I saw something online, I don't know, probably on Pinterest or something. I saw a t-shirt and I want to find this shirt. I've scoured the t-shirt shops in Walla Walla. Nobody currently has it, but the shirt that says Napa is for auto parts, Walla Walla is for wine.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
It's absolutely brilliant. I think Walla Walla, I think from a marketing standpoint, I'm I default to sarcastic. I just thought that was an amazing shirt. I must find one and send it to him just as a...
Well, send one to me too if you find one, because I love that.
I just thought it was awesome. And so I'm going to ask you to talk about wine in Walla Walla, and I'm not going to have anything really to contribute. But what I do know, here, I'll tell you what I know about wine in Walla Walla. The Bledsoe family has a winery, and Drew Bledsoe grew up in Walla Walla, played football at WSU, played for the New England Patriots in the NFL.
Yes.
There, I've exhausted my wine knowledge of Walla Walla, and all of it's football. It's all football.
It's all football related, but it's accurate. You got all that right. Yes, he does. He has a winery here. They have a tasting room downtown. I actually have, that's one of the ones I haven't visited. I'm a bit of a creature. Well,
because you've only got 100 to go through.
150 to go through, right? I know. My boyfriend and I keep saying, like, we're just going to get an alphabetical list, and we're just going to go one a week. Like, we're not going to, but we have
3 years later.
Yeah. You'll have more. You could literally do that for over 2 years, and you wouldn't be done. But yes, it's an incredible wine region. So many wineries, and we're very close to Oregon, actually. So the Walla Walla Valley AVA actually includes part of Oregon. So one of the wineries that I work with as a social media consultant is Roti Cellars, and they are in the Rocks District, which is a very special sub-region of the Walla Walla AVA. It was, I don't know how many years ago, I'm not a scientist, I should know this, but it's, I don't know, let's say 10,000 years ago, it was a river there was a big flood, and it created just this very unique environment where it's like a 2x2 mile area or something. It's very, very small, but it's just covered with rocks. And it actually is very similar to one of the wine growing regions of France, because at first people were like, you can't plant grapes there. It's rocky. It's, you know, vines are not going to grow. Well, I can't think of his name, but someone came to Walla Walla and was like, this is like France. Like, we should plant grapes here. And now the Rocks District is one of the most special and one of the most interesting, unique. That's where people want to go. One of the top things they want to do when they come to Walla Walla is go to the Rocks region. And there are only a few wineries out there, and not too many wineries that are able to source grapes from that area, because again, it is very small. But Roti Cellars, who I work with, that I just kind of, I'll save you the long story, but I kind of just fell into working with them. I got very, very lucky, and they are one of the most prestigious wineries in Washington State, definitely in Walla Walla. And they have a stunning tasting room out in the Rocks region overlooking the vineyards. It is absolutely beautiful. My boyfriend also works with them, so I'm out there a lot, several times a week. I always say he has the best office, because he gets to go out there and just look out to the Blue Mountains and over the vineyards. And it's just gorgeous, this very special area, and it produces just like a very different kind of funky kind of wine. And I feel like I kind of trailed off from your question, because instead of talking about wine region as a whole, I narrowed in on the Rocks region. But it's a very special small, like I said, sub-region of the Walla Walla AVA.
So you keep mentioning AVA, and for those of us like myself, I know what I've seen is there's multiple AVAs around the state of Washington. And for the life of me, I have still yet to figure out what AVA means.
An AVA is basically just a different wine growing region. And so I cannot tell you actually how many there are in Washington. I know that we actually just designated a new one. And the past couple, and yeah, I read about it, I got the press release, but I can't tell you the name of it. But we've got like the Red Mountain AVA, we've got the Walla Walla AVA. Those are the two big ones that I think, you know, if you go to like, if you go to, or, you know, there's probably 100 different AVA, just different wine growing regions, and they produce, you know, that's what affects the wine so much is the soil, is the climate, is the temperature, you know, if we get smoke, you know, things like that. And so they're just like different little areas that make up different wine regions. I hope that's a sophisticated enough answer. I'm not a wine expert either.
Okay. Yeah, I know. It's, and we'll, one of these days we'll get a wine expert on, and maybe they can tell us the technical of
yes,
this.
Yes, I could definitely point you in the direction of some winemakers who are more knowledgeable than I am, because I'm really just answering. I work kind of alongside these people, photographing them, writing about them. And now that I have been through an entire year living in Walla Walla, I have seen the process from beginning to end, from harvesting the grapes to pressing the grapes, to aging the wine, to then bottling it, and then aging that if you're going to, and then distributing it. Right now, we are actually going through harvest. The very end of harvest. Harvest was very early this year because we had a very hot summer. So basically everyone here on Walla Walla right now is very, very tired, because pretty much everyone is tied to the wine industry. And harvest is like seven. My boyfriend worked harvest last year with a different winery. He was working 7 days a week, you know, got a day off here and there. You're working 12-hour days, starting at 7 in the morning. You're working till 5 or 6 at night. But it's, you know, that's like, that's the time. It's about 6 weeks, and it's just, you know, that's when all the fruit comes in and gets pressed to start making wine, which is a really cool thing to see, by the way.
So you haven't visited every tasting room yet, and maybe in 3 to 5 years we'll check back and see.
We'll do a follow-up podcast. Follow-up.
In your opinion, what, I'm not going to ask you what winery you like the best, because that's an unfair statement to you, but what type of wine do you enjoy? Are you a big cab fan? Do you like, you know, box wine?
Good box wine out there. I will tell you, my boyfriend and I are not above box wine. You will see box wine in this house from time to time. You know, there's a lot of great wine here. I will tell you, I am a huge sparkling wine fan. Sparkling wine is my weakness. If I can be drinking sparkling wine, that is always what I want. And very cool that right now a lot of wineries in this area, and I think in the Northwest and maybe just in general, people are just getting more excited about sparkling wine. A lot of natural sparkling wines are happening now, which is different from the like traditional champagne method, which, you know, you cannot call something champagne unless it's made in the Champagne region of France. However, you can make wine like that over here. You can make it the exact same way, but you just can't call it champagne. So it is sparkling wine. But we have seen this really big just explosion of Pet Nats, which is natural sparkling wine, which is a different way of doing it. And that has really emerged in the last few years and gotten very popular. And a lot of wineries here are starting to do some of the traditional champagne methods, some, you know, natural wines. But it's definitely been a trend here. And it's really fun for me to see more and more sparkling wines come on the market. That's definitely my preference is sparkling wine. Sparkling. After that, I want to just be drinking a really like easy drinkable red wine. I love Pinot Noir. Unfortunately, this is not a good wine growing region for Pinot Noir. The Willamette Valley in Oregon is actually world renowned as a fantastic Pinot Noir growing region. So if you're going to drink Pinot, you should probably get it from there.
Okay. What do you like? Okay. So let's go. I'll build a hypothetical scenario for you. It's Saturday evening. You're not celebrating anything special. It's Saturday evening. You guys are going to go out. Sparkling wine is what you're going to be drinking. What type of food do you want to pair it with? Let's go with that.
And I'm at home?
No, you're out. You're out in Walla Walla.
Okay. Well, you know,
you're out in Walla Walla.
I can drink sparkling wine with anything. Okay. First of all, but I will say that I absolutely love, there is a French restaurant downtown called Brasserie 4. And it is probably my favorite restaurant in town right now. I'm, I have a few that I absolutely love, and it's just, I love Brasserie 4. It's such a great spot. And again, French. So obviously a lot of, you know, Cremants and champagnes on the menu. So, I mean, I love to go there. I think it's a Cremant Rosé that they have, on the menu that it's kind of like, we're going there. We're getting spark. We're getting a champagne, a Cremant. That's what we're doing. We're getting French sparkling wine and we're getting cheese. And I usually get the Vichyssoise, which is like a potato leek soup, steak frites, what my boyfriend usually gets. But for me, it's like, give me the sparkling wine, give me the cheese plate, give me the charcuterie, give me the salad. I like just kind of all the, you know, put all your favorite things together. But that's, okay. That is definitely a good one.
All right. So I'm on your blog right now and I'm looking at an article and I'm glad I had breakfast kind of right before we talked, because otherwise I'd be kind of quite hungry right now.
Well, thank you.
But you've got three delicious experiences not to miss the last week of Walla Walla Restaurant Month, which was February, but yes, that will be coming up soon. That's the nice thing. That's the nice thing about Restaurant Month. It
always comes back. Yes.
Right. And so I am enamored with this. I have two questions.
Okay.
The tasting menu is it Pasatempo?
It's Pasatempo. Yes.
So I've driven by that place and I'll be honest with you, from the curb, I just kind of went, okay. And just drove by. I'm not paying attention really. I'm just like, okay. And I'm looking at this and this looks quite delicious. But before we go there, you are at the Marcus Whitman. And really what I need to know, there's a photograph of you with the dog.
Yes.
Is that your dog?
That is my dog. That is my child.
That is your dog.
That is okay. His name is Shiso, like the Shiso leaf. Like the Shiso. Okay. If you are familiar, most people do not know what Shiso is.
I do not.
But to tell everyone, always asks us, and everyone always thinks that he's a girl because his name is Shiso, but it's actually S-H-I-S-O. And Shiso is an herb used in cooking and cocktails that comes from Asia, and it is very popular in Japan. And I traveled through Japan by myself for 3 weeks in 2018. I worked with a very highly acclaimed Japanese chef for years in Seattle. And then my boyfriend worked with Shiro Kashiba at Sushi Kashiba, one of the best, you know, sushi restaurants in the country, for years. And so we wanted to give a nod to our love for Japanese food and culture. But at the same time, we did not want to name him Sushi or Sake. So that's where his name comes from. That's my dog. You will see him a lot. His hashtag is Shiso the Great. He is the love of my life.
Okay.
My boyfriend and him.
I had to ask if this was an actor, you know, a stunt dog or, okay, so part of the family.
He looks like a model though. Isn't he a beautiful dog?
He does.
We got him from the pound. I mean, adopt, don't shop, people.
Awesome. All right. So let's go back up to this restaurant here. And back up is me rolling up, scrolling on the phone, folks. Pasatempo.
Pasatempo.
I apologize in advance.
No, you got it. Pasatempo.
Looks amazing. Tell us about that place.
It is amazing. And I will tell you, that restaurant, you could drop that restaurant in Seattle or San Francisco, anywhere in the country, and it would be popular and trendy. It is so well done. I think the first time I visited Walla Walla in 2017, it had recently opened, so I was very familiar with it. I'd been to it several times before we moved here. That is probably the restaurant we go to the most. It is definitely in my top three restaurants in Walla Walla. It's just outstanding. They make all their pastas by hand. And you said like, perhaps it didn't draw you in from passing by, but I'm telling you, Scott, you need to step foot in place. Cause it is.
No. I will. I promise you I will.
No, it's gorgeous. It's so well done. The bar is stunning. It's so well designed. When they opened and were conceptualizing it, they brought in Mike Easton to consult. Now, Mike Easton is a very famous chef from the Seattle area who had the beloved El Corvo in Pioneer Square for many, many years, highly awarded and acclaimed, sadly closed during COVID, but an outstanding, very, very popular restaurant. He also has El Nido in West Seattle, wildly popular and critically acclaimed as well. So they brought him over to consult. Jim German consulted on the bar program. Jim is like a famous bartender in Washington State. He worked all over Pike Place Market, Cafe Campagna, El Bistro. Our paths didn't cross in Seattle because I believe he moved from Seattle the year I moved to Seattle. So now we know each other, but I'm just telling you, they pulled in the right people. They did it right. Their food is absolutely, that's where I went for my birthday last month. You know, it was, you know, it's like, okay, are we going to go to Positempo? Are we going to go to Brasserie 4? Or are we going to go to Hathaway's or Saffron? And those are kind of, those are my go-to dinner spots. I also love T-Max, but for me, it's kind of, I don't know why, that's kind of like my lunch spot. I absolutely love it as well. But I think I said this to you in the pre-interview, but we have, I feel, a disproportionate amount of good food here for the size town that we are.
Oh, absolutely. No. See, that's why I want to take your downtown core and bolt it into my downtown core. Yes. Because Wenatchee's improving. No disrespect to Wenatchee, but we don't have the choices that you have within, you know, a walking distance in Walla Walla. So since, you know, eat, drink, travel, y'all, we've talked about travel, we've talked about eating and drinking, so let's just keep going there. How about, well, let's go breakfast.
Okay.
What's Walla Walla got going for it for breakfast? Or what do you think about Seattle breakfast? We can talk about both because they're both Washington State.
Well, you know, let's start with Walla Walla. I will say that we're, you know, I would say that we don't have a ton of options, but we definitely had some good ones. Bacon and eggs is a very popular spot downtown. Maple Counter is also wildly popular and is probably my favorite breakfast spot in town. Yeah, it's probably my favorite breakfast spot in town. It's really well done.
So what are you going to order if you're there?
I mean, it's Maple Counter, so you have to get pancakes, right? Like, I usually am not a sweets person for breakfast. I will tell you, I definitely want savory in the morning, but usually when I go there, I have to get a little small stack of pancakes. And then I'm telling you, this place just stays packed. And the owners, and I'm so sorry I'm forgetting their names, they also own an incredible ice cream shop in town that just opened last year, right after I moved here. It's called Pinecone Creamery. They do like 20 to 30 different flavors of ice cream. They do different things every month. They always have three different vegan ice creams on the menu, and they are good. Not that I'm a vegan, but I just, you know, to taste it, I had to, I'm telling you, it is, again, Pinecone Creamery. It is so cute and well done. It's a young couple, you know, family owned, family run. Just, you know, you feel good about supporting them. So if you're looking for ice cream, that's a great spot to go to.
Yeah. So the reason you were saying pancakes, then I kind of went, is I may be one of a very, very infinitesimal small slice of the population that's not a big fan of maple syrup. And then the other thing is pumpkin. I just can't do anything pumpkin. So
not your time of year, is it?
No, it's really not. See, that's kind of this is, you know, you guys are all like, oh, it's fall, and I'm like, oh, it's fall, yay. No, just kidding, I actually love fall.
And I do too.
So I tend to pancakes, you know, if I'm gonna do pancakes, they're almost gonna be dry. I'm just not gonna put maple syrup on. It just doesn't work for me. That's kind of my thing there.
Well, they're not gonna be good.
But ice cream for breakfast. Yeah. Ice cream for breakfast. Now, are they open at breakfast time? Because I could do ice cream for breakfast.
I can do ice cream for breakfast too. Especially there.
Exactly.
I think they open at noon, but they 11 okay. or 12. So they're not open in the morning, but they are open pretty late. I know during the summer, I think they're open until 10 or 11 o'clock. Again, awesome. They're very popular. They do pints. It's really good. I have to be careful going there, coming home with so much ice cream, and you just tear through it. It's really, really well done, and just the sweetest couple that owns it. And I remember chatting with the husband right after they opened. I wrote something about it, and I was like, so what? Like you just always made ice cream. He was like, well, it's just wanted to. So I just took this like ice cream class last year, and it's amazing. It's just he knocked it out of the park. So really happy that we have them here in Walla Walla feeding us breakfast and ice cream.
Perfect. Well, then how about, since they're open at noon, that transitions nicely into lunch. So if we're not going to have ice cream for lunch, which makes me sad, but okay. what do you got to say about lunch in the Walla Walla area?
Yeah. So, I'll start. I mentioned T-Mex earlier as my favorite lunch spot, and it definitely is. This is if you want to have a more kind of like real dining experience and you're not in a hurry. It is a beautiful restaurant. They also do fantastic dinner, by the way, but I don't know. It's kind of my lunch spot.
You like them for lunch.
I love them for lunch. They have a great wine list. They have a beautiful menu. They have a fantastic chef. The owner, Tom Macaroni, is just, I had him on my podcast about a month ago. He has done so much to contribute to the community. His chef is also his partner and has been with him for many, many years. It's just really well done. They're actually one of the few restaurants that I know after sitting down with Tom recently that are not experiencing staffing problems right now. And that's just an attribute to the environment, how well it's run. People want to be there and work there. But the food is just wonderful. And they have, and I'm sure they're about to take this off the menu because I know it was a summery dish. It may already be off the menu, but for summer and leading into fall, they had this ahi tuna with plantains, an avocado, and a mango salsa. And I'm telling you, I went there to get that for lunch at least 10 times. Oh my God. It's so good. Light, but very satisfying. So they've also got great pastas, salads. It's wonderful. Like I said, it is a little fancier of an experience. It's not a place you want to go if you have 20 minutes for lunch. I would also say, downtown Walla Walla, did a fantastic job of starting to close off parking and having outdoor seating for restaurants. They did a way better job in Seattle. Walla Walla jumped on that like right at the beginning, maybe one of the first in the state. And the downtown area, First Avenue, has been like a block of it is now completely, it's not, you cannot park there. They're going to make it a permanent no parking place. It's just,
that's going to be permanent.
It's going to be permanent. And it's just, you've seen it. It's just that little area is kind of lined with food, like little food shops, a couple gift shops, coffee shops, things like that. And there's a lot of fun little restaurants right there. And then you can go eat in the plaza. There's a hot dog window called Wiener and Bun. I think they're open 4 or 5 days a week. So you can go order your hot. They must have like 20 to 30 different kinds of hot dogs. And they're like really interesting. I just like a basic hot dog with like mustard and ketchup. Okay. I'm not like super complex and my hot dogs are my pizza. I want pepperoni pizza. I want a hot dog with mustard and ketchup, but they do all these really interesting things. I remember they had like a Japanese influenced hot dog and it had like bukkake on it. And just, it was so interesting. I had to try it. But yeah, you can go get your hot dog. There's a great little pizza spot called Sweet Basil. There's a Greek place that I love called Yama's. I've eaten there many, many times. Two, they're fantastic. And you can just, any of those little spots right there would be super fun to just grab your food and just sit outside, especially this time of year. All the trees down there, the leaves are changing. It's beautiful.
Absolutely. No. Yeah, Walla Walla is fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
We could go on and on and on about it.
Yes.
It's disproportionate.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's so much going on in this small town.
Yeah, and I think we attribute that really to the wine community. And I definitely think that's why we have so many good restaurants here, because I think people that make wine and people that love wine love good food.
But not just that. See, one of the things you haven't brought up, which, and you haven't lived in Walla Walla all that long. I'm obviously much older than you. But before Walla Walla was known for wine, the Walla Walla sweet onion was kind of the calling card of Walla Walla, right?
Right, yeah.
And the fact that they have a baseball team in Walla Walla, and I love sports. Baseball's my favorite sport. The Walla Walla Sweets baseball team, but their mascot's called Sweet Lou, which is an homage to both the Onion and Lou Piniella, who was the manager of the Mariners during their most successful time in their pathetic existence.
Okay. I didn't know that. You're teaching me something.
Yeah. So I just thought, any team, and that's my, I'm telling you, Sweet Lou is the homage of those two things. I know it's the Onion because I have one of their hats somewhere around here. And anyway, I love the fact that Walla Walla, like Wenatchee, they both have teams. They're both in the same league. Our Wenatchee's team's the Apple Sox. Get it? We're our thing, what we're known for here is apples. And you guys have the Onion. And I just think what Walla Walla is doing is... Okay. Have you been to Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco?
Yes.
Okay. I've been there. I haven't been there in a number of years, maybe 10 years.
Yeah. It's been 3 or 4 years for me as well.
It's exceptionally touristy.
It is.
Okay. Pike Place Markets borders on that to me, on being, I can see how it could go that way.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, I would say the Fisherman's Wharf is definitely more on the touristy side than Pike Place Market.
But Walla Walla is a tourist destination now, but it doesn't, to me, it does not feel touristy. And I don't think it's going to tip that way. I think because it's an agricultural community, I think it's, you know, no pun intended, it's rooted. Or maybe all pun intended. You know, it's got its roots. It's an ag community. It has other, you know, the other large employer there, which seems a little disheartening, you know, the penitentiary.
Yes, we do have one of those.
I mean, you do. I mean, but I just think Walla Walla's got a lot going for it. I really do. And I'm kind of jealous that you're living your best life there from that as the home base. But that's not all you do. So, I mean, on your website, I mean, I'm looking and you've got a blog, you got your podcast. Why don't you tell us a little bit? Why don't we just transition to you? Let's talk about you for a second. How can people find out more about you? What is it you're doing? Where is it you want to go with what you're doing? Why don't you tell us some of that?
Yeah. Well, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok at Steph4. My Facebook and my website are Eat, Drink, Travel, Y'all. That's also the name of my podcast, which can be downloaded anywhere from any streaming, anywhere you can stream a podcast. You can download that. We just recorded the 24th one. I just started this year. So I'm in as many places as I can be. Bandwidth only goes so far. It's always so hard for me when people ask me what I do, because it depends on what day of the week it is or what month it is. I'm doing a big project right now that I'm wrapping up with Facebook, and Instagram was one of the influencers that they selected to help promote promote Reels on Instagram, helping to integrate that more into the Instagram experience. I'm about to wrap up a 3-month project with them. I am working with a few wineries on a retainer basis as their social media manager. Social media managing and consulting was really how I got started, and is still a good portion of my income. I do writing. I've written for the Walla Walla Wine Alliance. I've written for the Washington State Wine Commission. I've written blogs for Alaska Airlines. And then of course write for myself, as well as other, you know, one-off contracts that I've done different things for, guest blogging and writing and things like that. I do photography sessions if someone needs that. I don't consider myself, you know, I do consider myself a photographer, but that's definitely not my primary source of income. It's kind of a tool that I use. And I do think that, you know, my photography has definitely come a long way and completely self-taught. I don't know exactly, you know, what my goal is, because I feel like it changes every day as new opportunities present themselves. We're in kind of an ever-changing world with social media, and it's evolving. And you know, I have opportunities today that I couldn't even imagine 2 years ago, and this, you know, 5 years ago. I do know that I love food. I love wine. I love the hospitality industry. I love telling the stories of the individuals in the hospitality industry. I love being in a kitchen with my camera or a winery with my camera. I love sitting down with a winemaker, a chef, a restaurateur, a food marketer, anyone that's in, you know, the hospitality industry, learning about them and what they do and sharing that. And I just fell in love with food when I was maybe 18 years old. And it all stemmed from wanting to cook healthy meals at home for me and my boyfriend at the time when I was in college, and quickly learned it just kind of mushroomed. The healthy food was a little boring. I actually you wouldn't know from my Instagram, but I actually am fairly healthy. I eat a very high plant-based diet, but I also indulge a lot. But that's where my love for food started. And then I just got really into food television. Never thought that I would be somewhere where, you know, I've worked with chefs that were, you know, on on Top Chef and been to the, you know, been to some of the best restaurants in the world. And, you know, getting to live by Pike Place Market. Like I never dreamed, you know, 10 years ago in Alabama that I could be having experiences like this. So, you know, I feel like my goals are definitely evolving. But, you know, at this time, just continuing to, you know, to work on being a social media manager and continuing to expand my presence online so that, you know, mm-hmm. my website and my social media can, you know, generate more and more income for me. I'm really trying to get more into like merchandising and affiliate linking right now to, you know, create some more kind of income that's, you know, kind of passive that I'm not having to, you know, you do mm-hmm. actual work, you set up and it kind of goes. So that's one thing I'm working on more right now. But, you know, any kind of social media consulting or content creation building, I work with a lot of food brands, a lot of wine brands, and that's probably the bulk of my income right now is sharing different brands online. And then, you know, obviously the social media consulting, but we'll see. I know that, you know, I'd love to be writing for Food and Wine one day. You know, perhaps that's in the cards, you know, maybe it's not. But I think there's a number of directions I could go. And I will say, I definitely like being a freelance person. When I did move to Walla Walla, I did briefly, you know, take a job here with another person, for a small firm. It was not for me. I like setting my own schedule. I like having creative control over what I'm doing. I like being very hands-on with my clients, and I am very hands-on. So, I don't want to say I feel like I'm on vacation every day, but I really do. I feel like since I left Alabama that I've never really had a real job yet. I've made more money. I've every year made much more money than I was at my desk jobs in Alabama. Sure. So I've definitely, you know, had some success, big setback in COVID, but things have come back really well. So I feel very, very fortunate, and I have worked very hard to be able to just work around, you know, the passions that I love.
That's awesome. I'm going to put you on the spot. Okay. You didn't know this was coming. This is putting you on the spot.
Okay.
How much have you traveled around the state of Washington?
I would say pretty extensively.
Okay. I'm going to put you on the spot. Tell us one off the beaten path place that you've stumbled across, you know, whatever, however you found it's irrelevant. Share with us one. I jokingly say when people ask me, well, what do you guys do? I say, well, we talk about Washington State. And we're kind of off the beaten path. For example, you'll probably never see us create content about the Space Needle or the Seattle Pike Place Market because it's been done so much. What can we really add to that that's of value? I do have a goal, and I'll put this out there, is that if there's anybody still alive that was working on the actual construction of the Space Needle, I think that'd be a fascinating conversation to have. What was it like to be building that iconic building? But think about it, that was built in 61 and 62, 60 years ago. They, you know, the youngest somebody would be is 80.
Yeah.
So, okay. So the pool is probably shrinking.
Yeah.
But so we talk about things that are Walla Walla is slightly off the beaten path. Mm-hmm. Okay. Dayton is a great little town. Yeah. I like Dayton. Mm-hmm. Dayton's kind of cool. Even further off the beaten path. Share something with us that you've found in Washington State.
Well, you have put me on the spot, and I have had the pleasure of working with many small tourism bureaus in the Pacific Northwest as being an upcoming influencer in the past few years. I would have to say off the top of my head that it's definitely going to be the Skagit Valley for me. And I don't know how familiar you are with the Skagit Valley. That is still pretty close to Seattle, but we are looking at about an hour to an hour and a half north, depending on where you're going. But it is another, like Walla Walla, it is a very rich agricultural hub. But being on the west side of the state and on the water, it's a very different, very similar to Seattle and the weather patterns, but just that's where all the tulips come from. That's where the tulip, you know, that's where they have the tulip festival mm-hmm. every year. That's, they grow yep. everything there. And there are so many small little gems of towns there, like Edison, like Bow, like Laconer. I was in the San Juan Islands last week or a week and a half ago, and you know, can't say the San Juans because everybody wants to go there. We were on our way back from the San Juans and I was like, we're stopping in Laconer. We're going to Nelthorne. That is this outstanding restaurant that I had never heard of until I was working with the Skagit Valley Tourism Bureau a year or so ago. They sent me there. I fell in love with it. It is a hyper local restaurant. I believe they told me they source like 90% of their everything that they're doing within 15 miles of the restaurant because they are right there. They're the water's right. You know, you're right there on the water. All those farms, they're growing everything. And it is just, oh my gosh, everything there was wonderful. And there are all these little gems like that in that little Skagit Valley area, which is kind of just like a collection of small towns around, you know, you go from like Laconer, Edison, Bow, like up to, you know, like Chuckanut Drive where Taylor Shellfish is in that northern location. Yep. That's part of that. It's all that area and all these little towns. And I started working with the Skagit Valley Tourism Bureau during COVID, during the summer of COVID in 2020. They wanted to promote the farms there. We're all starting to do farm stands so that you could go and actually shop there because they couldn't, you know, people weren't going out. They didn't have restaurants to sell to. The farms were struggling as, you know, the restaurant industry was struggling, but they kind of had this big like transference and people started doing their shopping at these stands. And so I wrote this, I wrote a blog about it last year. I wrote something about it this summer about, I called it farm hopping is better than bar hopping or something like that. That was the takeaway that farm hopping was the new like summer activity, but for someone that loves food, you'll go, you know, like there's like there's a cheese, you know, you can go where they, you know, have a goat farm and you can buy the goat cheeses and like the fetas and just, then you can go, you know, you go a little farther and, you know, there may be an apple farm. You go a little farther. There's just, you know, they have huge farms like Shoe Farm out there that they're doing everything. Just everything grows out there. If you love food, I mean, and for me, like I do love to cook. But I love to just go. I love to eat simply. I love to have good cheese, good honey, like good herbs. Like I love to help put dishes together with my boyfriend and being able to go to a source, which is another reason that I love Walla Walla so much because we're also a big agricultural hub. But the Skagit Valley is just, and we've often talked about this, my boyfriend and I would hope that perhaps that may be, you know, down the road where we end up because it is very, very special. And now I feel like I've given my secret away and I want to take my answer back.
I've never heard of the Skagit. No, just kidding. No, and that is a great area of the state too. So I appreciate you sharing.
Was that off the beaten path enough? I don't know if it was for me.
Well, so here's the thing. When I think of the Skagit Valley, Laconer's pops to mind because Laconer's been, for a long time, Laconer's been a kind of a little destination to go to, small little, like, let's run up there for the day type thing. Mm-hmm. You said Edison. Nobody says Edison. Bow. Yeah, we hear about Bow. Chuckanut Drive. Yes. But you didn't say Mount Vernon. No. So, yes, you were talking off the beaten path. So, yes, you were fine. You didn't say go to the Burlington Mall. You didn't.
Vernon is nice too. There's some great.
You didn't say you like to go to the Skagit Valley to go through the McDonald's and get a number one combo. So yes, you were off the beaten path. It was wonderful. It was absolutely wonderful.
Well, it is a very special place, and like those are really small, again, small towns, but they have. I'm shocked at the cool places that I found there, and I could never name them all, but I do, as I said, I have multiple blogs on the Skagit Valley. If you cruise my website, I'm writing about them every few months because I work with their tourism bureau a lot, and it is one of my favorite things to work on.
And we'll put a link to your blog in the show notes for all of this as well. So I'm just going to say thank you so much for making the time today to sit down and chat. What did I not ask that I should have asked?
You know, this is your show, Scott. I could talk all day, especially about food, about Washington State, a place that I love so much. You know, we could talk more about Seattle. We could definitely talk more about Walla Walla, but I feel like we hit all the high points. I hope I didn't ramble on too much. I know you asked me a question. I go off for 20 minutes because I am a little bit of a talker.
That's all good. It was a lot of fun. So thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Join us next time for another episode of the Exploring Washington State podcast.